Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's time for our weekly politics chat slot. Politics by Night, it's called. And our correspondent for this today is the political editor for newsroom.co.nz, Laura Walters, who joins us now by Zoom. Laura, kia ora, thanks very much for joining us here at night.
Oh, kia ora, thanks for having me.
So, should we start maybe with the government's need for speed causing some palpitations among constitutional nerds? Do you mind explaining this, please?
That's such a good summary of it. Thank you. I think you made it sound much sexier than some of the detail is. But I'll do my best to walk you through it without putting people to sleep. I think the need for speed, that want by this government to move fast and break things and deliver on all these promises as fast as it can, is kind of well known by a lot of people. You know, they've spoken a lot about their 100-day plan. Mm. We know that they set records, as I think you've spoken about before, for their use of urgency. Mm. They've pushed things through Parliament as quickly as possible. They've signed off on all of these 49 action points in their 100-day plan. But there have been some issues along the way, and this is what has gotten these public law and constitutional nerds, as you describe them, talking and kind of constantly checking the government or pulling them up or calling them out on some of these things. And one of the first examples that comes to mind for me is, and bear with me because this is kind of technical, but I'll do my best here, is the promise around significant natural areas. So that's something that councils have to implement, and it's around Indigenous biodiversity. And basically, the ACT Party wanted this gone. So Andrew Hoggard, the Associate Minister, his first big announcement, his first big thing that he was going to deliver on was getting rid of these significant natural areas of Indigenous biodiversity that councils were implementing, and he wanted to come out and deliver something for his rural voter base and say, look, I've gotten rid of this for you, as I said I would. The problem there is that a law needs to change in order for him to be able to deliver. He wasn't able to change this law in time. So what he did instead was basically made it sound like he was delivering on a promise without actually delivering on a promise. So he put out a PR with some really strange wording, which basically said, we're going to deliver on this promise in future. In the meantime, I'm signalling my direction of travel, and councils, it would be, quote, unwise to bother pursuing this policy. And this was something that really got these public law nerds up in arms, saying, well, hold up, you can't just direct councils to break the law here. They have a legal obligation to follow through with these policies until you do change that law. So it was kind of getting ahead of the process there. And he was pulled up on it, and he was very careful with his wording, and he didn't quite break the law, but essentially he all but told, you know, councils to not fulfil their legal obligations, which would be breaking the law. Yeah. So it's one of those examples where he kind of got ahead of the convention. He got ahead of the process. He almost got ahead of the law in this need and this want to deliver on these promises as fast as possible. And it kind of speaks to this broader pattern. You know, we were talking about the use of urgency, talking about ticking off this 100-day plan as fast as possible, going through the same amount of consultation, of, you know, these checks and balances, making sure there aren't going to be unintended consequences of policy or law. And so the government, you know, is potentially setting themselves up for some issues like this when they're speeding through at this kind of breakneck pace.
I mean, the government has repeatedly asserted that, and particularly with regard to urgency, that this is okay because many of these positions were signalled way ahead of the election. The election itself was a de facto consultation with the public. In fact, one with extremely high voter turnout compared to submissions on pretty much any piece of legislation that's ever passed through the House. The public voted. They voted in this government. You know, Bob's your uncle. We're just doing what we said that we would do without going through the tedious months-long process of doing what we'd already said that we would do. I mean, does that stack up for you?
No. unfortunately, that months-long process is incredibly important. Yes, in an election campaign, you make promises at a high level, and in principle, people, you know, accept a lot of them when they vote for you. But what doesn't happen in an election campaign is going through that technical detail, going through a law step by step, making sure that you are broadly consulting with all these different groups and what we're talking about in terms of those unintended consequences, because those can slip in and you end up doing things that you didn't mean to do. And then when you have to go back and retrospectively fix things or change policy, and things like that, you know, mistakes slip in this way, and we've seen it happen before. So I think that argument is incredibly flawed. I also, you know, it does take months to put in place a new law or sometimes even a new policy in New Zealand, but it's still much faster than a lot of other countries. So we do have fast lawmaking in New Zealand. Whether you think that's good or not, we do. And those that select committee process, that the part that is being mostly cut short through this use of urgency is really important. It gives people a chance to have their say, to engage with the democratic process, to be heard, but it also makes for good lawmaking. And when I was actually doing that story about the Andrew Hoggard and his strong signal to councils around the significant natural areas, I spoke to someone who I'm sure you are familiar with, Andrew Geddes, public law and constitutional law expert, and he made a really good point which has stuck with me, which is, yes, this government can do it this way. You know, they're well within their rights. They can move fast and break things if they want. They see a lot of these conventions and constitutional conventions as roadblocks. They're stopping them from delivering to New Zealanders. But these let's call them roadblocks, have been put in place for a really good reason. They've been put in place based on our past experiences. So sure, if you're a government, you might want to come in, you might want to move quickly, you might want to ignore these conventions, these roadblocks, these checks and balances. That's fine. That's your right to do it. But you don't really then have a right to get upset when things go wrong in the future because you don't have those checks and balances along the way.
Let's talk about Winston Peters' story today about Chumbawamba and copyright stuff. We've talked about that and sort of talked around that a little bit earlier on in the program, but you wanted to focus on some other comments that were made last week, Laura.
Oh, yes. Winston Peters, Chumbawamba, words that I didn't think I was going to be saying this evening. It's interesting. I mean, part of this has been building for days, right? The issues with Winston Peters, with his rhetoric, with his lashing out at media and basically anyone who questions him at the moment. I mean, this is kind of classic Winston Peters stuff. It's what we've come to expect, but it just feels a little bit different at the moment. So if we kind of take your listeners back a bit, he just held his State of the Nation speech over the weekend in Palmerston North, and it was very well attended. And he made some comments there, and I really hope I get this right, because he spent the past few days calling out media who have misrepresented his comments, so I will do my best. He was speaking about Te Pāti Māori co-leader Rāwhiti Waititi, his previous comments that Māori DNA may be superior to the DNA of other people. Winston Peters referred to these comments in his speech and drew parallels with the eugenics program in Nazi Germany. And of course, when the deputy prime minister and the leader of a political party makes those kind of comments, especially in the current context with, you know, what is happening in Gaza, and, you know, kind of this inflamed rhetoric that we have at the moment, people are going to listen. They're going to call him up on it. So he courted controversy with those comments. He got, you know, the controversy. But now it's really interesting watching how that's playing out. With, you know, we've heard these controversial comments from Winston Peters before, but currently he is not just the leader of the New Zealand First Party; he's also the Deputy Prime Minister. So you would expect him to maybe temper his comments a little bit more, like he has done in the past when he's held these types of positions. He's not doing that this time. And he's not, it seems like he's not listening to Christopher Luxon when Christopher Luxon is trying to pull him up on these comments and bring him back. So I think we're seeing quite an interesting situation developing with Winston Peters there.
Do you see that Deputy Prime Minister, Foreign Minister element of it as being the differing factor there? Because I have seen from some conservative commentators, you know, pointing out that Rauri Waititi's initial comments about Māori having superior genetics, some people claiming that did not attract the level of criticism and vitriol that Winston Peters have here, also pointing out that Te Pāti Māori has a history of really strong language. Debbie Ngāre Waipaka, for example, saying, I stand here as a descendant of a people who survived a Holocaust, characterising the reversal of smoke-free legislation as being systematic genocide. And these more conservative commentators saying, why aren't you treating these with the same gravity? And I suppose talking to the media here, why aren't you treating these with the same gravity as Winston Peters' comments? But do you see that deputy prime ministership, foreign ministership is being a deciding factor in that?
Yeah, I do think that there is actually some merit in some things that are being said there. You know, it is up to media to call out any political leader when they're using, you know, inflammatory language and at least ask them to explain it and back it up, right? So there may well be, you know, some criticism there that's warranted, but I do think there is a distinction, as you point out. This is someone with an immense amount of power. You know, he is the deputy prime minister. He should be held to a higher standard, and he's also, you know, representing our country on the world stage as foreign minister, as you point out. And it's really important when other countries look to us that, you know, that they kind of see unity there, that they see these, you know, someone like Winston Peters being mature and, you know, not kind of having this inflamed rhetoric as we're seeing at the moment. And it's Winston Peters being Winston Peters. But it's also quite some of it's been quite juvenile at a time when people are really hurting and where society is incredibly divided. And that's kind of a whole other part of, you know, other part of the conversation. But we should be looking to those people in leadership positions to kind of, you know, tone things down, to set a good example. And when, you know, when he's using these kind of words and then kind of making light of it by, you know, when Chris Hipkins called him out, called Winston Peters out, and he referred to Winston Peters as a drunk uncle, and then Winston Peters comes back at him and says, oh, coming from someone who would get drunk off a wine biscuit. And then they both brought their, you know, their favoured biscuits into Parliament today. You know, Chris Hipkins brought his ginger nut, you know, for obvious reasons, as his favourite biscuit. And then Winston Peters had a packet of super wine sitting on his, you know, his table in the debating chamber. And like, yes, that's all very amusing on the face of it. But actually, this is a really serious issue. And we're seeing our top level of political leaders just being quite juvenile. And I think that's really disappointing at a time like this, really.
Laura Walters, political editor for newsroom.co.nz. Thanks very much for coming on and chatting to us this evening. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.